will introduce Mr. Mark Brain and Dr. Stefan Begleiter, where they will, I don't know if it's pronounced that way, sorry, and they will share this half-hour presentation. The scheme that we will use is the same. We have more or less a half-an-hour presentation and then a half-hour of discussion where all the panel members that participated in this paper will sit and receive from you comments or questions in relation to the topic that's being discussed. I'll introduce Mr. Mark Brain, PhD Project Officer in the Sector Project Promotion of Responsible Fisheries, Division 45 Aquaculture, Fisheries and Food and Dutch GTSET. He's a graduate in MSc and PhD in Fisheries Biology, Marine Zoology and Marine Chemistry at Kiel University in Germany. He's developed a work in multivariate analysis of fish production and integrated aquaculture agriculture systems for rural developments in the Philippines, Zambia, and Peru, and aquaculture production efficiency in Israel. He joined ECLARM in 1991, leading research project in Ghana on appropriate aquaculture systems from 1994 at the ECLARM's headquarters in Manila. From 1996 to 2004, he served as a senior scientist as program leader for IAA Systems. From 2000 to 2006, he worked in Penang, Malaysia, and at the renamed World Fish Center. Dr. Brain's focus on research has been on the introduction and diffusion of integrated aquaculture, agriculture, and traditional smallholder farming systems in Asia and Africa for poverty alleviation, with field activities in Bangladesh, India, and the Philippines, Vietnam, Malawi, and Cameroon, and covering ponds, rice fields, seasonal food plains, and small water bodies. He contributed to in-house development of farmer participatory research, tools for household level monitoring and evaluation and adoption IA and its impact. Uses sustainability indicators and agroecological and social economic parameters. He has held training courses in the vertical on this approach. So with this all the impressive curriculum, I leave with you, the Mr. Mark Brain from Germany, to do this explanation. Mark, please.
Yes. Good morning, and I apologize for the long introduction. Next time we'll shorten it massively. As our session chair mentioned, this is about organic aquaculture, and we've attempted to give a summary of the present status and the future market trends, my colleague Stefan Bergleiter and I. To give a general definition of organic agriculture, it is to optimize the health and productivity of interdependent communities of soil, life, plants, animals, and people. So there is a philosophical background for this activity. If you look at organic aquaculture per se, under the definition of the Codex Alimentarius, which is about production processes and practices of ecological production management systems that promote and enhance biodiversity and biological cycles and biological activity. And these are based on the minimal use of off-farm inputs, which is very important, and, of course, the holistic management practices that restore, maintain, and enhance species diversity and ecological harmony. So that is the philosophical basis of organic farming and organic aquaculture in specific. There has been quite a recent history of organic aquaculture. There have been initial trials in the 1980s already, but the first confirmed and fixed forms of standards have been organic carp in 1994, which started in Austria and Germany. Then they switched to salmon standards, which were developed in net cages in Ireland in 95 and 98 through the Soil Association of the UK. Then standards were developed for shrimp in Ecuador. Afterwards, the first national organic standard was developed in France in 2000. And then we have a succession of spread of different species and standards into different countries. Notable is that there was a standard or a general organic standard for organic aquaculture developed by IFOAM, the International Federation of Organic Agriculture Movements, in 2000, which set the basic framework for such things. Notable is also that in 2005, which was quite a setback for the whole spread, that the government of the state of California instead a ban on labeling of organic products, which was a setback for the spread of organic aquaculture in the U.S., and it's still stuck in that situation. As a further step, recently, or a major milestone was that the EU set its all generalized organic standards in 2009. If you look at the development of production globally of organic aquaculture, the first reported summary of data is for 2000, around 5,000 tons, and this has increased dramatically. The last data for 2008 is a tenfold increase, over 50,000 tons, 52,000 something. For 2010, the report is that this is even beyond 100,000 tons, and we're waiting for that data. And so within 10 years, you have a 50-fold increase of organic aquaculture. If you look at the value, it is around 230 million as of 2008, and this is expected to increase massively also. There are by now 240 certified operations, of which there are 72 in China alone. This is spread over 29 countries with at least 30 species, by now many more. But these are confirmed ones from the recent survey. There are 80 different standards globally. In the EU alone, there are 18. This trend is for steady increase, as you just saw, and also a trend towards more and more national labels, that also at national level there are increasing numbers of labels. If you look at the geographic distribution of organic aquaculture, according to the last survey, Europe is leading with 25,000 tons, the major share, led by Asia with 19,000 tons and Latin America. The figure for Africa is essentially Madagascar, and the one for Oceania is New Zealand. If you look at the global spread, every dot is one country. It's not an operation, so this is just a display of where these operations are globally. You see that due to the density of countries, Europe has the highest dots there. But if you look at the production by country, China is the major leader. How could it else be? And this is expected to massively increase in the future with 15,000 tons, more than a quarter of the total production. UK with the salmon production, Scotland leads with 9,900. Ecuador with 5,300. The rest of the world with 26 countries is the rest of the share. If you look at the species, there are at least 15 fish species certified organic in production, with 6 crustacean species, 3 mollusks, 1 sea cucumber in China, turtles in China, 1 at least, and 4 microalgae also certified. If you look at the global spread, you see the highest diversity of species and operations in Asia, which is mainly also led by China there. Here is an overview of the main fish species under culture, where we've lumped carp into one group, where you have the common carp in Europe, but also diverse Asian carp species, and these are also expected to increase in their numbers of certifications. Trout are essentially the rainbow trout, the brown trout and the brook trout, salmon, and then the Mediterranean species of red drum, the meager, the sea bream and the sea bass, tilapia, which is now globally farmed, and the striped catfish, which is very local again, just in the Mekong Delta, also certified. If we look at the shellfish, a selection is that the black tiger shrimp, western white shrimp, and pink shrimp, these are all marine or brackish water species, the freshwater prawn, and then the blue mussel and the Chilean mussel as major shellfish species. If we look at the production by species, this is led by salmon at the moment, followed by shrimp, pangasius, and cod. And the other species are to a lesser degree. We expect in the future much more production of carp, gray mullet, and also tilapia to come up. So this picture will change over time. These are the red bars that you see. The blue bars are projections from a survey 2 years ago where the producers were asked to formulate where they expect to be in the future in terms of growth. And the salmon and the shrimp producers expected the highest growth among these. Unfortunately, the producers in China, which are also in large number, could not respond in this survey, so those expectations are not covered in this. So this only gives part of the picture. It would be good to repeat the survey very soon. General production issues around organic aquaculture are that which species are permitted. There are certain variations among standards and by country, which are also reflect on which are allowed to be introduced or which, if introduced, species are permitted. Concerns about biodiversity, for example, planting plants on dikes or which natural plants occur in the ponds, for example. There's a recommendation to have enhanced polyculture in the systems. Then there are varying positions on rearing systems. Some accept net cages and ponds. Tank systems or closed systems are only allowed for hatcheries but not for grow-out. The stocking density is usually limited. Aeration use is also limited, and there's a guide towards increasing energy efficiency. There's also an emerging discussion on increasing reducing climate impact, increasing efficiency there, but this is not manifested yet in any of the standards, but there's a discussion ongoing on this. There's a requirement for monitoring of effluent quality, of the ecological status of systems, particularly the benthos in the ponds, that there should be a higher diversity in the ponds, and of course of improved social standards, and there Naturland has been one of the leaders in this aspect. If you look at production issues around fingerlings and larvae on the hatchery side, the aim is towards a closed cycle of species reproduction versus wild seed collection. So that's part of the philosophy of organic aquaculture. And there the requirement is that at least two-thirds of the lifespan of a cultured animal is under organic conditions versus bought in conventional juveniles. There are restrictions on hyperphysation or induced spawning. And, for example, for shrimp, the eye stalk manipulation or ablation. There are different guidelines and different interpretations of that. Hormonal sex inversion or reversal is not allowed. Polyploidy or GMOs are also not allowed. Another aspect is that some hatcheries are available or able to supply fingerlings at common prices. Others command a premium on juveniles. Switching to health issues, there is a general observation of reduced instances of diseases in organic systems, of course, with greater extensity. The costs for medical treatments are considerably reduced. For example, in net cages, there's a recommendation in combating fish sea lice to use cleaner wrasses as a biological control of lice. No antibiotics are permitted in invertebrates, for example, in shrimp. But in fish, there are certain criteria under which this is allowed, depending on the lifespan of the species, shorter or longer lifespans. Vaccinations are permitted, and probiotics are also permitted. For predator control, for example, for birds, there's a recommendation to use nets, and there's quite a problem with that in Europe with the cormorants. Otters and seals are also recommended to use other control measures instead of managing them in the conventional way. Unwanted fish fry, there's a recommendation to use plant extracts instead of toxicants. And within the plants, the use of detergents and antifoulants is also strictly regulated. Also, the distance between farms is an important aspect by locating farms and avoiding disease problems. If we switch to feed, this is the major aspect at the moment, or major bottleneck, namely getting enough certified feed. This is the main impediment to expansion at the moment of organic aquaculture. And this applies mainly to net cages and semi-intensive pond culture systems, not for the extensive carp systems, but for systems where you need feed, the demand outstrips feed supply by far. And at the moment, ingredients are sourced on the international market, which has problems with costs, for example, and problems also with getting these through customs, etc. There are attempts to have initial local productions, but these are costly, and there are problems with convincing feed producers to produce organic feeds locally. And so for them, it is also difficult to source these feeds locally. There have been attempts that these producers would encourage farmers locally to produce organically certified ingredients for feed, But this is a very difficult and slow process, and this needs to be tackled in the future if organic aquaculture is to expand. And there are a number of initiatives ongoing at the moment to overcome this, which mainly leads to having contractual arrangements with farmers to supply these raw ingredients, cereals mainly, for organic aquaculture feeds. There are also regulations on the permissible sources and limits of fish meal and fish oil. This is an overview of the production costs in organic aquaculture in terms of euro per kilogram, showing mean values and ranges. And you see that in general, it's somewhere between just over 2 euros, ranging all the way to over 6 euros for sea bass and sea bream, which have just recently come on the market. But you also see high variations. If you look at what actually the retailers gain on the market then from the consumers, these numbers can be 10 times as high. So there's a huge increase there along the value chain towards the consumer. Looking at production issues and focusing on smallholders, particularly farmer groups, the experience has shown that these need support to get organized. Farmers do not get organized on their own. There needs to be some support from outside to bring them together. This is often initiated by processors who are interested in obtaining certified organic products. But in some countries, you need a legal basis to form these groups in order to function and work. These groups normally need a lot of training, support getting inputs, fingerlings, larvae from certified hatcheries and feed, also to have investments in their operations and a lot of marketing support. So to foster these groups is quite an undertaking. And the biggest investment in all these is in internal control systems, which are very demanding in terms of time, human resources, and the efficiency and continuous quality of these internal control systems. These are mandatory by not only the organic certifiers and standards, but also by all the other standards, usually. And that is a huge hurdle to establish. But there are experiences where these work. They just cost a lot of effort and organization and talent. In implementing farmer groups, you need a long-term perspective. There are examples where contract farming has worked with these arrangements, and it is important, or there's a great opportunity to communicate this to the consumer, that it's actually smallholder farmers who are benefiting from this. And if this is then conveyed to the consumer, there might be an incentive for them to buy this product versus others along the lines of fair trade, etc. In the certification of smallholder groups, there is a long history with certification of coffee and tea cooperatives, so there's a lot to learn from the way these have worked, and they only work based on the functioning internal control system. And in starting them, the costs are usually or typically covered by processing and exporting companies. They provide the initial subsidy to this. There are already certified shrimp farmer groups in Costa Rica, India, Bangladesh, Vietnam, and Indonesia. If we now move to processing, usually the products are sold to processors, and they carry on and handle the product from there. So mostly it stops at the farm gate, the custody of the farmer. But some farmers, particularly larger operations, also have processing activities integrated into their own facilities. In these facilities, it is mandatory to have a separation of these processing lines from conventional processing. For some, in the initial phase, if the volumes are very low, if it's just a few tons of product that needs to be processed, the processors are very hesitant to stop their lines of processing and switch. So that's in the initial part, when you have a new entrant and only one farm in a country, that is a huge problem for them to get their product processed. It requires documentation and traceability, certain limits on detergents and how pest control is handled in the processing facility. There are requirements of anesthetization of vertebrates before slaughter, so fish need to be either electrically stunned or somehow anesthetized before they are slaughtered. Additives are restricted or prohibited. This ranges from metabisulfite to phosphates to anti-caking agents and salts, for example. And in the processing then of breading for fish sticks or other value-added products, for such as spices, etc., these need to be organically certified too. Looking at the range of products, these are on the market today: fresh, frozen, smoked, marinated, modified atmosphere packaging, and value-added products, all the way to ready meals, which can be heated in the microwave. Looking at marketing, the total market value at the moment is 230 million, as mentioned before. Major markets are in Europe, Germany, the UK, France, and Switzerland, but others are coming up. There are growing volumes, but also growing competition. There are also continuously new marketing channels, for example, through value-added products and through restaurants who are offering organically certified meals as part of their product. There's a high potential for expansion in the USA and also a gradual growth in developing countries from the emerging middle classes. Now, if you look at the amount of organically produced product, but how much of that is actually marketed as organically labeled, there are some interesting observations there. For some species, almost all of the product is also organically marketed, or marketed as organic with a label on them. But for some others, it is not. These are either new entrants who haven't established their market yet, or that some markets are so well covered that the buyers say, I want to have your product because I'm sure it's safe, but I don't care about labeling it organic. I just want to be sure that there are no antibiotics in it and so on. So for them, the organic product is the safest bet. And so a lot is, for example, the shrimp is marketed as conventional shrimp, but it actually is organic origin. Marketing channels depend on species and region. There's a diverse web of products and markets and linkages. These range from buying product at farm gates and organic food shops, which is where it started, the whole movement. But today you find them in supermarkets and even in discount shops for certain high-volume products. You have a range of intermediaries in this value chain: buyers, agents, reprocessors who buy product but then modify them and sell them onward again, wholesalers, and then retailers who then have to communicate this to the consumer and sell them. There's also a lot of onward product trade for product, for example, products from Asia coming to Europe, being processed, and then shipped out again. You find them in Dubai or in other markets. Retailers also have a lot of own branding. So you don't see where it actually came from, or it has to be labeled where it came from, but you have only the label of the retailer on them. We also see emerging markets in China massively, in Hong Kong, South Korea, and in Taiwan province of China. If you look at the consumer perspective, this is the main driving factor behind all of this whole market. And we see an evolution and a diversification. It started off with the original philosophy of naturally grown and sustainable product, but has then also stepped over the last couple of years towards healthy product, tastes good, is a fair product, all the way to lifestyle products such as I'll treat myself to an expensive but a good product. So under the LOHAS, the lifestyle of health and sustainability, has come up a lot in the last year. So all this is a great change on the consumer side. The main aspects of consumers' perspectives are credibility. That's the most important thing. One small problem in the news can damage the whole industry severely and the credibility of a certain supply chain. It is very sensitive to scandals, and still doubts persist. In all the surveys, consumers always communicate that they still doubt that maybe some of the product they're buying is actually non-organic. There's still this underlying distrust of the whole supply chain because of the previous problems. And it is up to the producers and the supply chain to eradicate those doubts. There is a requirement that these products are, and the producers are, honest and credible. These and the communications also need to be very realistic. So you need very realistic stories of how you communicate the content and the quality of your product. that is moral and ethical business. It is safe for the environment and is socially beneficial also. So all this means that there has to be a lot of communication to the consumer. Also, there's a distinction between categories in organic. You have the main high-volume products, the grain, cereals, dairy products, fruits, vegetables, and then lesser meats. And seafood, fish, is a smaller niche product in this whole category. And for those, therefore, you can have higher premiums for some of these products. And that is a very unclear picture at the moment. But for the main products, the price premiums have reduced considerably over the years. But for some other products, the niches, because of the niche, the premiums are higher. Among standards and labels, there's a high variation due to also the number and also the origin of these standards and the philosophy or the interpretation of the philosophy behind them, dependence on their constituencies, if they're private or national labels or, for example, a regional, for example, the EU label. And also depends on the recognition. Some might still think one label is better than the other. And equivalence is important because there are also costs involved in recognizing each other's labels if you want to transfer these labels. A word to the role of IFOAM in this whole process. It is the world umbrella organization of the organic farming movement. It has been very influential in running accreditation systems and basic standards. It also acts as a representative in policy processes, for example, in the EU and the USDA. It is a member of ICEAL, the International Standard Body for producing and implementing labels and standards, and is also playing a fostering and harmonizing role, for example, to mutual recognition of standards and certifications. There's a whole level of diversity of inspection and certification bodies nowadays as a business sector already. Many inspections are usually required to be implemented by inspection bodies. These are supposed to be separate from the certification bodies, which is an ICEAL requirement. Accreditation is a separate one, again, according to ISO 65. There are certain rules on audits, the manuals on how to conduct these audits and how to interpret the standards and checklists for these. And each standard has should have these available for the inspections and certifications. There are issues of qualification and training for inspectors. In the initial years, there was a high demand for these, and even in the growing sector today. This is beneficial if you have local outreach offices in Asia, for example. You don't have to send somebody from the U.S. or from Europe to conduct inspections on small farms. It adds to the costs. So efficiencies are an important problem or important issue in this whole process. For the last two slides, the future outlook, we expect production increases mainly in salmon and shrimp, but also, for example, from China, there will be a much higher production in the future, and we will probably see a shift in the share of the global production also towards Asia, dominating the production, as we see in the global aquaculture statistics. It is expected that the total value will exceed 500 million by next year. The undersupply for some finfish is observed, for example, for tilapia. At the moment, there's not enough supply on the market. There is further diversification needed, but is already happening. The feed bottleneck needs to be solved. That's the major critical issue. There have been calls for harmonization among all these standards and labels, but it is also regarded as a competitive business. So the businesses of labels are unwilling, partly or mostly, to give up their share in the market. So that is an issue that we'll be dealing with in the future. The USDA has been lagging behind in this process, unfortunately, and we can discuss this later, perhaps, the reasons for that. We also see market expansion, for example, in China, South Korea, and Russia happening, and see more in the future. And finally, for the recommendations in this session, and we hope to have a discussion about this in the following half hour after this, remaining minutes, we see an increase in efficiency of the value chains, and we'll need more of that. Much more, because we have a lot of inefficiencies, particularly in input supplies and so forth. The big feed bottleneck I already mentioned, for example, to go to contract farming for ingredients. There's recommendations based on experiences that you have joint ventures between retailers and the intermediate chain all the way to the processors, or sorry, producers. We need more education of the consumers to recognize what organic products are about. We need policy support by national programs, which is lacking at the moment. Then we have the issue of harmonization, and there it would be helpful to have a rigorous benchmarking among the labels. It is recommended to have a merging of fair trade and organic because they're quite in similar lines, and there might be synergies to be gained from that. And in the future, we need more applied research and development, particularly in terms of demonstration facilities, which are lacking at the moment for organic farming. Where can you send somebody for a few months to learn about organic farming, learn certain technologies, and go back and implement them? At the moment, the farms are quite closed, and there's not much opportunity to learn as a newcomer. So, with that, I would like to give the floor to my colleague for a short presentation on experiences from the Philippines, where it was tried to implement organic aquaculture was planned, but then there was a learning phase of implementation there. My colleague Uwe Scholz, and I will just call up his.
Yeah, good morning, Mark. Could you click for me? I'm a bit more comfortable speaking like this. Yeah, that's a short case study from the Philippines. Yeah, quick introduction. The chair asked me. I'm a marine scientist working for German Technical Corporation since 1987 and since 4 years in the Philippines. Yeah, GTZ, you maybe were wondering about the abbreviation. We are a government-owned company at present working all over the world, 132 countries, with 14,000 employees, and the Philippines is one of our partner countries, receives quite substantial support. This organic certification, eco-labeling, is just a tiny fraction of our work there. It's actually also sought for me as a hobby because I was exposed to some projects when I was in head office. And Mark mentioned it already. We have some good record cooperation with Naturland concerning eco-labeling, and this is one of our pilot projects, 1999 in Ecuador, with quite good results. Yeah, click, Mark. And since then, Mark also presented it already. We have some good experience from Thailand, Vietnam. Lake Victoria is a bit special. It's not aquaculture, but we are quite happy about this because this is the first eco-labeling of a capture fishery, yeah, the night perch. In Tanzania, also done together with Naturland and public-private partnership with ANOVA. So, Philippines. Project area, it's the Western Visayas. Hope you're a bit familiar. Province of Negros Occidental. And the whole thing started under the umbrella value chain export promotion. The Western Visayas, sorry, we don't have a pointer. It is the number 123 of the black square. It's an area which has an excess production of about 80,000 tons of milkfish per year. And there was, of course, the idea, what can we do to help, in particular, small-scale producers. And there are producers associations. And the idea was the euro is also very attractive, so why not try export into the EU? No, leave it, Mark. And that's how the whole thing started. And it was also, milkfish was not very well known, maybe only to Filipinos working in Europe. Milkfish is not an easy fish, high bone, high fat content. But nevertheless, we tried it. Of course, we also did our market check before. And the retailers and processors in Germany said, yeah, in principle it's okay, we will try it, but please be prepared to bring plenty on demand and, if possible, with an eco-label. Because eco-label was selling, this was especially from Metro, which is not a small retailer, bring as much as you can, but eco-label. That's why we started trying to introduce an eco-label, and it all started in 2007 with a symposium where we also got the blessing from the government to adopt the Naturland eco-label. And we did this through a local organization, an NGO, Negros Island Sustainable Agriculture and Rural Development Foundation, NISARD. We had people trained in Germany, Naturland, in the criteria, and they were sort of assessors and could do all the pre-assessment. But the label is not sold under Naturland, but under NISARD. And then we did some processing trials in Germany. I will cut it a bit short. The milkfish is quite attractive for niche market, for sort of convenience food, fish paste, not for the general market, for fillet, because it was also a clear message, the product is too expensive, fillets. Nothing can beat Pangasius, sorry. This is end of the discussion. But there is still a market, a niche market. And if you're more interested, you can have a look at poster number 94 and talk to my co-author, Rose. But as I said, we didn't stop with this. We started to focus on local market. Why export? Because there is also a demand. There is also a local market. In the Philippines, people, especially a little bit more with middle income, are also tired eating food maybe coming from outside, which is contaminated. We have a lot of problems, food scandals. If there is a labeled product, there are also people willing to pay a premium in developing countries. And so NISARD has now started two labels for milkfish and tilapia to follow. One farm is certified. The customers, the product is well received. And they even say it tastes better. There are certain restaurants which offer this organic stuff. But to conclude, for us as Development Corporation, we welcome this organic labeling, of course. It's a step in the right direction. It doesn't do any harm to avoid chemical. Milkfish in particular has some problem. There's one product called Brestan. I don't know if you're familiar. They use it to eradicate the snails in the ponds, and that's some very nasty stuff and highly poisonous, but still used. So it doesn't do to any harm to avoid it, to improve the quality of life. But what's important for us, there must be something in for the smallholders and for the producers and the developing countries. The premium should not only be scooped by the retailers, but something has to trickle down, because we are also asking these people to avoid certain habits. Maybe you reduce production. That's also one of the problems in organic farming in the beginning. So hopefully that's maybe also one of the policy recommendations, that organic farming, yes, but these smallholders like this proud gentleman with his bangus cage, they should also get something. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for that very good presentation. I would like to invite now the people that were in this panel to come forward, please, to sit here, and so in order to be able to receive questions or comments of each of you that you are interested in knowing more about details. So I'll open the floor now for questions. So I have one here. They're out there.
Thank you, Mark, for a very nice presentation. This is a sort of certified farming. Yeah, they'll be called organic also. In this place, the people, farmers that I have talked in Thailand, yes, they like it because they have assured market and also get little higher price than the non-organic within bracket product for the palm gate price, little higher. So, but the farmers, those, as we heard yesterday, day before, the farmers are not the one who make the profit at the end. All those people into the Europe and all those production chain, they are the one making big product profit. Does the are there any insurance for the farmers, to protect the farmers, because they are the one get the risk of following the recipe given by a processor for the organization that you'd said. If there is no insurance scheme for farmer, would the panel consider add the insurance scheme for the farmer as a condition for this certified organic production? Thank you.
Thank you.
May I just quickly respond to that, then I'll ask Stefan to reply. Specifically for that, I don't know of any insurance schemes on the supply chain, but I know that there are attempts now ongoing for insurance of these small farmer groups by insurance companies, microinsurance. Those are being tried at the moment for organic aquaculture, yes, but not for the supply, I don't know.
Maybe a partial answer might be to that we are currently including fair trade aspects into organic certification. And, of course, these fair trade aspects are focusing on price issues for the farmers and also on insurance schemes at the end of the day. So, yeah, we have seen this necessity as well.
I'll take a note of that, yes. Thank you. Any other comments from the panel? No. Go ahead, please.
It's a very good presentation, Mark and his friend. Thank you very much. I believe that I'm Abdul Wahab from Agriculture University, Bangladesh. I believe that in the human history, the production mechanism was organic. Agriculture was organic, livestock was organic, fish was organic, everything was organic. With the increase in number of population and decrease of resources, we intensified ourselves. Mm-hmm. Thank God, Europe is not overpopulated, but we are overpopulated. So we are producing more food to feed our people, and good proportion of this food we are sending to Europe, America for getting extra premium. Thanks very much. Grateful to the developed countries as well. I am concerned with the further going back to the organic stage, whether the developed country people as well as the middle class elites of the developing countries will get the food and poorer will be deprived. So we need a basic compromise what to do. And I find, as an academician, and I have been working on aquaculture still, I find it very difficult to understand the organic recommendations. What about the food? What is the label? How much protein should be there? What is the label of fish meal? Is a cow dung can be used, but cow itself should be organic or not? So different type of, even I'm concerned, I've been reading for a long time, Big Greta, the lady first did the workshop in Minnesota University. I've been following that. I was in Vietnam Organic Conference as well. So the whole matter is so complex, and it should be standard, unique standard for the world standard we need, and I think FAO can lead in collaboration with National Land and all other things. But the initiators, definitely I appreciate their initiation. I would be very much interested that ZTZ and National Land, they are going to the farms. They should come to the academic institutions as well, so that in the academic course curricula, organic is taught, so that eventually manpower developed to make it understandable. So two things, academic. First thing, concerned about future generations' food. Thank you very much.
Well, you raised a number of issues and very good questions, and I will try to ask or to answer only one of them, and that is a question that arises frequently when we talk about organic aquaculture or organic food production for that sense, in the overall production of food and in the overall generation of economic activities, because I think that is also very important to remember, that we talk about food production, but we talk about also economic activities. And we've seen the growth of organic aquaculture, how quickly now it grows. But still, it's a very, very minor part of the overall picture of aquaculture, and of course within the overall supply of fish or seafood supply, seafood production. And I think in that respect, the role of the aquaculture sector in general and the role of organic in particular is very important. It's a very minor share, but it addresses very squarely needs of certain consumer segments. And I think in this respect, it's a sector which cannot be ignored by the aquaculture sector. It provides economic benefits, it provides jobs, it provides specific benefits also to small-scale farmers, which, as we learned in the previous session, have a number of challenges, have a number of obstacles, but that can be marketed also targeting the benefits they derive from, for example, linking the organic to the fair trade values. So I see very much your points, but I think we also have to look at the economic benefits generated not only to the sector, but the overall economy from this type of production. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Adam. Any other comments from the panel? No? You have your question there. Then we have, here, then on the back, here, then yourself. Try to be brief, sorry, and then in the
yes, thank you.
Question or comment.
Thanks, Mr. Mark and other GTZ personnel for the nice presentation. I'm Apul Hassan Shomon from Bangladesh Department of Fisheries. Perhaps the both of you know about Bangladesh situation. There is a vast scope in Bangladesh for promote water bodies in regarding biodiversity and also promote enhancement of water land. And you know about Bangladesh situation. So already GTZ implemented such type of program in Thailand and other countries. In this aspect, I would like to know from you about the main constraints of organic aquaculture and what are the main measures in our country situation. Thank you.
I think the main constraints are really different, talking about fed aquaculture systems such as tilapia, pangasius. Here's really the feed, the main constraint. Because the vegetable ingredients of the feed have to come from certified organic agriculture. That's a very basic requirement, and the organic agriculture is very in its infancy in these countries. So this is really an obstacle so far. Talking about Bangladesh shrimp farming situation, we see a very big potential. As was mentioned earlier, these farmers are typically very close to organic principles. It's a certain effort and training is required to get the internal control systems running. I mean, that's a basis for every kind of quality management and also, of course, for the organic certification. Maybe it's market development is the key word here. It's really sensibilization of the retailers, the importers, and so on to see, to acknowledge the potential of such an organic production, and then we think there's no limit, let's say, for the percentage of Bangladeshi farmer, for example, to get certified.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, the comments?
Just a brief response on that. I know that I'm involved in the preparation of a bigger GTZ project, which will start next year, on which will also involve, as part of it, organic farming, organic aquaculture in the coastal zone in the southwest. And so that is planned, that is ongoing.
Thank you. Your question, please.
Yeah, Yogi Carolsfeld, Canada. Two questions, quick ones. One is, how did the price or the market in Europe respond to the economic crisis? Like, did we see a proportionate greater crash, or even same thing as everything else? And the other question is the Chinese production. I was wondering if that's going to the European market, if it's using the European standards, or where is that stuff going?
Thank
you. What are the criteria?
Well, I can answer regarding prices in the European market in general, and prices went down, no question about it, at all levels. So prices went down, margins went down through the value chain. And in fact, volumes also went down, but not as much as values. And in fact, if you look at international trade statistics, I mentioned in my presentation that the value of international trade in 2009 declined by 6, 7, 8%. But the volume of fish traded, in fact, went down by only 1%. And what does that mean? It means that the volumes more or less were the same, but the price of the products fell by 6 to 7%. And what was interesting last year was that the trade between developing countries more or less was stable. It was imports to the big three markets that fell. And the big surprise last year was the resilience of markets in developing countries, that the domestic demand was quite good, in fact. And a lot of aquaculture farmers that had been accustomed to export last year started focusing much more their activities on domestic markets and managed to penetrate those markets much more than before. So it shows again the potential for aquaculture products, not only in international markets, but also in regional and local markets. Thank you.
And about the Chinese?
So the organic aquaculture operations certified so far in China are purely for directed towards the domestic market in China. They are certified against more or less national Chinese standards. We as Naturland Association, we had a few initial contacts by companies that would be interested to go to the international markets, and this is under, let's say, preparation. So yes, there's initial interest, but so far the project for domestic consumption.
Thank you. I have your question now. Yes.
Yeah, just a couple of very quick comments. The first is that you've alluded to this fact that organic is going towards fair trade. There's some getting it together. There's some perhaps mission creep coming on the scene here. I wonder what the risks and benefits are to the current certifiers there. In fact, will they start to lose their identity? And let's face it, these are brands. The second thing is, and I think you've shown, this is a real niche market. It's growing, but it's a niche market. And I think many of the principles that are embodied in the organic movement, we shouldn't just judge by how big the organic movement is itself through sales, but the impacts they're having on mainstream aquaculture through adoption in the broader scheme of things in line with the organic movement. Just a couple of comments.
Does anybody want to have any comment on that, or?
Regarding identity of labels, of course we would rather see that, for example, for Naturland label, it would be a shortcoming if we didn't address the social and economical aspects of our product. So the response by the consumers is rather, okay, yeah, you might be ecologically, you might be sound, but how about the people involved? And also during our project work in southern countries, we realize how important this part is. And so it's a bit the other way around. We do not, think it doesn't make sense to restrict ourselves to purely, let's say, ecological issues. So because the consumer, he recognizes the label and he wants to have, let's say, a good feeling or something about the labeled product. So regarding Mark also wants to say something on the broader context of organic practices, and I think it's of course. I mean, organic is not in first order a market activity. That's really not the sense of the organic movement. It's really it's a technical approach, and we think it's a particularly sustainable and future relevant approach. If we talk about peak oil scenarios and so on, so. Mm. Yes, of course, I completely agree that it is not only regarding the size of a potential or a real niche market. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just a short comment on your second comment. Actually, you also see that one could hypothesize that the organic movement, since it started so early, has had an effect on the other conventional standards by setting the bar very high. And others, one can see that they're moving up that way. You also see products in the field differentiating themselves. For example, we have products called near organic, and they have that on their label. produce closely to that. And those are niches, and people buy it because they say, okay, and they even communicate why it's not yet 100% organic, but they say we're following the spirit and we're close to it. And that is already a very good communication to the consumer. And they also get a premium for those. So things are happening. You're right. There's a lot of cross-fertilization there, maybe.
Maybe just to add to that, I think the important thing there is that it's the process that is certified. It's not the product. And so in relation to the rest of the aquaculture, yes, of course, it's a niche market. The consumer is not always aware that the product he's buying actually may be just as good as a conventional aquaculture product coming out from the normal conventional aquaculture. They are both safe products, yet he's paying a premium for a process. He can be assured that certain antibiotics were not used, that certain stocking densities were kept, and so on. The consumer confidence is very key, in my view, in the whole process.
Okay. I have four hands up, five. So we are getting into the limit time, so I will ask each of you that will speak, please, very brief, and in the responses also try to be very accurate in the response if it's possible. The lady here, then Albert, then you, and you're the lady there. Please go ahead. Please brief and to the point. Yes.
Two quick questions. The first one has to do with genetic modification. What's the position of organic with regards to organisms and also the ingredients for the feed or ingredients for anything? The second question has to do with a greater clarity on what exactly organic is for aquaculture products. For me, it's very easy to understand organic when there's soil involved. But with aquaculture, there's a big area that we're talking about, and we talk about biodiversity and all that, so it's not very clear. And we have this controversy in British Columbia going on right now with regards to farm salmon.
Okay.
So the first question is rather easy. So we have a very negative position towards genetical modification, of course. That's one of the basic principles, not to deal with the GMOs in either in stock or in feed plants or ingredients and so on. It's clear the organic movement developed from agriculture. That's clear, and the nutrient cycles are more local, easier to capture in agriculture, and so it was developed coming from there, transformed to aquaculture. I think it will exceed our time to go more in details. You can visit our homepage. You can maybe send us emails so we can correspond further on standard issues.
Thank you. Albert, please.
Just a comment and maybe a possible recommendation, Mark and Stefan, and that is that, you know, if we recognize that one of the bottlenecks to get the industry to grow to the next level is the availability of certified feeds. I'm actually a member of the working group, of the USDA working group, to develop standards there. And obviously feed is a massive issue and is a massive problem. But what would be really good if GTZ or if FOAM, with the help of FAO or NACA, you know, have a workshop or a working group where we could just discuss the feed-related issues. Hmm. And maybe you invite Soil Association or other people and just get to grips with this issue. In a week's time, I'm going to present a paper in Bogor in Indonesia on nutrient recycling and organics. Again, the interest is there, but always the same question is, you know, we have to use certified feed.
Okay. That can
great.
Be.
Thanks.
Yep.
Yeah, we will take up that recommendation. That's great, Albert. Yeah.
Okay. Yourself, please.
Yeah, Atada is my name. I'm from Nigeria. There are very basic questions that always agitate our minds in the third world. Like my minister brought a proposal from a multinational who wants to embark on organic production in Nigeria. And told me, what's the difference between organic and the manure? Why should we? So I want this forum to give me some little explanation to the panel members. The difference between organic production, integrated fish farming, and manure, please, just simple explanation. Thank you.
Well,
I mean, as was mentioned before in the intervention by Dr. Wahab, there's a lot of near organic production. So the difference, of course, if you ask straightforward, what's the difference between organic and integrated fish farming as well, the one is certified and has a label that says it's organic and it's been produced according to certain rules and regulations and standards. And the other one, the integrated fish farming, could maybe be organic if someone went there and looked at what were the procedures followed and whether they comply with the standards, and then a label would be given. So, there's a lot of near organic production out there, and to me, one of the key questions is if this is such a promising market, a niche market at the moment, which fetches a premium price on the market, how can we ensure that we get more of the small producers into this game? What can we do as different stakeholders in order to facilitate this process? I have some ideas for FAO, but
maybe a short note also on integrated measures. We in Germany, we are talking about integrated pest management, for example. That means, okay, you can apply certain pesticides, for example, which are not permitted in organic farming. No? So sometimes it means, okay, it depends how you use the term. It can mean you integrate various types of production and multi-species production, but it can also mean, okay, you integrate natural measures with, let's say, chemical treatments, whatever.
Your question, please.
I'm Shiv Kumar. I'm from India. I just want to point out that in the when we market the organic products, it is projected by many supermarket chains that it is supposed to be healthy, supposed to be more tastier. That's what it came out in the talk. Is there any rational basis for this? And whether in the process we are legitimizing certain subjective thoughts, in a modern world where everybody is every governments are trying to teach their citizens to be more rational and more scientifically more oriented, are we legitimizing a concept which is not yet completely proved, and saying that it is, it is supposed to be good, and are we cheating the consumers? I mean, are you legitimizing the process of cheating? And second is, I would like to know what is the basis or what is the view of Californian government or the person who have not yet accepted this organic label. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take that.
Well, I will not try to provide any scientific basis for anything. I just want to say that we are talking about marketing and we're talking about consumer needs. So what we are talking about here are how producers can, if they are interested, try to produce a certain product using certain processes to try to sell to certain segments of consumers that are looking for that type of product. So we're looking for how to satisfy certain needs that are expressed by certain segments of the market, which today are about 0.5% or something. So that's what we are talking about. Whether they are scientifically based or not, that's a different issue that we can come back to. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about marketing issues, how to target certain needs, certain beliefs, certain values that are held by some consumers. Thank you.
Any other?
I think just to add to that, I think your point is well taken. I don't think the consumers are being cheated, but there is an important role to educate consumers. And on the other hand, there's an important role for the consumers to educate themselves. I mean, if consumers think that the product is healthier, that's not necessarily because they have been misinformed. It's just their general perception. There's also a general perception that farmed salmon may be full of antibiotics and you can't eat it three times a week. It's quite widespread, not necessarily among this group here, obviously. And so this is why the education of consumers is very important, I think.
Thank you. I have one question from the lady there.
The view of U.S., I mean, California government, why it is not at accepting that question, will you just kindly answer?
Yeah. Maybe just, I mean, there is research being carried out on health or aspects on inorganic food, for example, pesticide residues in different kinds of products. And so there's spaces, right? Not on all aspects, and again, it's a process certification that's also important, and it's always communicated. Nobody will put on a claim on the product, okay, this is healthier for you. That would be very tricky in the market, yeah. And it would be truly close to consumer fraud. Regarding California, the issue is that California said as long as there's no federal rule on organic aquaculture, we will not allow that. It's not like a ban for all times or something. They just said we wait for a USDA rule to be out. Albert knows it much better than we. Maybe the special background in California is the strong prevalence of wild seafood. I mean, they are very close to the sea, and so maybe there's a general negative perception of aquaculture as such. So that they said, well, we will be very careful with that. Maybe there was a lobby work also behind it.
We're cutting out time of the lunch because basically they have to get back at 1:30 for the next session. I have the question of the lady there, which by gender respect, I think that we have to take that question. I also have your question that you're coming up. So if you all bear with me other 4 minutes, but please be very short in the question and in the answer in order to be able to attend this, and then we'll close the session.
Hello. I'm Sushada. I work for TTS at Thailand. I just would like to respond to the question of the bottleneck problems of the organic shrimp farming in Thailand that one processor raised earlier. The key problem that we are facing by working with the small farm in Thailand is that the high price, the pricing is the key issue because we cannot cope with to match with the exporter, the processor. To the cost that provide to the producer. This is because of the two main issues. The first is the stock, the low density of the shrimp. This is to follow the organic certification rule. The second one is coming from the feed, organic feed, which is very high. So I think this is the two main issues that making the cost looks expensive to the viewpoint of the exporter and to the importer of the destination international market. Okay. And the second one is we are looking for the exporter to drive the market, but as organic shrimp is very niche market, as we know, so it is not very their priority to drive this product. But this is the issue for Thailand.
Thank you very much. Thank you much. Please go ahead.
Also more a comment and a question on the former question on the organic yes or no cheating on the consumer.
Yep.
You have to see this organic in the perspective of the history. In the past, in agriculture and in livestock, before aquaculture came up, there was a lot of pollution and a lot of misuse of pesticides, chemicals and drugs in livestock and in agriculture. That's why organic movement came up and has its role to play. So you can't just say it's cheating consumers, it's protecting consumers.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that. Well, I would like to thank very much all the presentation, all the panel, the excellent work they did. Thank you very much for that. And the session will resume at 1:30 after.